It's actually a really fascinating psychological divide. Like, when you walk into a casino, right, and you sit down at a blackjack table, you implicitly understand that you are battling mathematics.
Right, yeah, you know the house has an edge.
Exactly. The house has an edge, and you play accordingly. But for some reason, when people walk up to a racetrack, all that logic just completely evaporates.
Oh, toy.
They point at a horse with, I don't know, a funny name, throw down 20 bucks, and just hope for the best. It's treated like this giant, chaotic lottery.
It really is. I mean, they look out at a pack of 1,000-pound animals running at, what, 40 miles an hour, kicking up dirt. And they just assume it's pure, unpredictable luck. They see chaos, so they basically bet chaotically.
But what if you stopped treating it like a lottery? What if you started treating it like a meticulously planned heist?
I like that.
Right. What if you could calculate, observe, and just strip the luck completely out of the equation? Welcome to the Pitcot Podcast. I'm Annabelle Pitcot.
And I'm Bill Pitcott.
And honestly, the information we are diving into today is absolutely staggering. Like, it is pulled directly from the best-selling ebooks on the Pitcot ebook store.
Which are incredible, by the way.
So incredible. You need to visit www.pitcot.com to download them. Seriously, go grab them right now.
Yep, do it.
And while you are doing that, please subscribe to our channel if you haven't. Activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
We really appreciate it.
We do. We appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too. Because, haha, the value we are dropping today is going to completely change how you view this sport.
It absolutely will. I mean, the Pitcot sources systematically dismantle the whole illusion of luck.
Completely.
Yeah.
So, our mission today is simple. We are destroying the myth that horse racing is about chance. If you are listening to this and you've ever, torn up a betting slip in frustration,
Which we've all done.
right, it's likely because you just had no structured plan. So today, we are taking an unabridged, exhaustively deep dive into the factual mechanics of professional handicapping.
Leaving absolutely no stone unturned.
None. From reading the dirt on the track to the exact mathematical formulas for managing your money. Okay, let's unpack this. Because before you even look at a horse, or reach for your wallet, you have to look at the data.
The form
The
guide.
form guide, it's basically the bettor's Bible. But let's be honest, the first time you look at a form guide, it looks like you're trying to read the Matrix.
Yeah, it really does.
It's just columns of like 6-point font, tiny numbers, and these bizarre
It
abbreviations.
is deeply intimidating by design, I think. But you have to push through that initial friction because that paper, it tells you the physical and historical truth of every single animal on the track. It gives you recent finishes, distances, track conditions, all of it.
Okay, but let's look at the mechanics behind those numbers. Because one of the most critical metrics people either ignore or just completely misunderstand is the time since last race.
Oh, absolutely. The layoff.
Yeah, it's essentially a biological resume. If you see an 8-week gap on a horse's form, that requires interpretation. It could mean the trainer gave them a relaxing sabbatical and they are fresh, or
Or it could mean they suffered a minor injury and are entirely rusty.
exactly. It's like looking at a resume. An 8-week gap could be a vacation, or it could mean they're entirely out of practice. You have to read the context clues around that layoff to separate the sharp punters from the hopeful ones.
Precisely. Let's contrast that ambiguous 8-week layoff with a horse that has run 3 times in the past month. Let's say that horse finished fifth, then in the next race finished fourth, and then the last race finished second.
Oh, wow. So a clear upward trend.
Right. The form guide is showing you a biological progression. That horse is physically expanding its lung capacity, it's gaining race fitness, and it is finding its competitive rhythm.
It's a horse that is peaking.
Exactly. But, and this is important, raw finishes only tell half the story. You have to layer on the speed ratings.
Because raw finishing times are a complete liar, right? Like, a fast time on one day might be a slow time on another.
Exactly. Raw speed means literally nothing without environmental context. That's why speed ratings, like the Beyer speed figures or racing post ratings, They are absolute gold.
Because they filter out the variables.
They strip away all the noise. The algorithm behind a speed figure adjusts for the track condition, the exact distance, and the class of the race.
Give me an example of how that looks in practice.
Okay, let's say a horse runs a blistering time and earns a 105 rating at Belmont Park on a fast bone dry track.
All right, great run.
It's an elite performance. But let's say another horse runs a 105 rating at Santa Anita on a wet, sloppy, muddy course.
Oh, I see.
The raw time of that Santa Anita horse will be much, much slower. But the speed figure neutralizes the mud. It tells you that the actual effort exerted by both horses was exactly the same. The numbers standardize the performance, so you can compare them apples to apples, regardless of the weather.
That is so cool. Which brings up the concept of the class drop. Because in the Pitcott's horses, this is highlighted as a massive signal. But let's clarify the jargon for a second.
Yeah, let's break it down.
So, if a horse was running against Spakes Company, which is essentially the major leagues of horse racing, the absolute elite, and today it drops down into a mid-level allowance race, which is more like the minor leagues, why does that drastically tilt the probability?
Well, think about the physics and the psychology of the animal. In a stakes race, the pace is punishing.
Because everyone is so fast.
Right. The horses are faster, they are aggressive, and the physical pressure is just immense. Horse might finish sixth in that race and look terrible on paper.
Yeah, a casual bettor would see a sixth place finish and just move on.
Exactly. But they've been battle tested. When the trainer drops them down into an allowance race against weaker, slower horses, the game suddenly slows down for them.
Oh, that makes sense.
They aren't being pushed as hard early. Doesn't guarantee a win. Obviously, nothing does. But they are the alpha in that new pack.
Okay, wait. I have to push back here. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Sure, go ahead.
If all this data, the speed figures, the class drops, the track conditions, if it's all printed right there in the program for anyone to buy for $5, how are casual bettors completely ignoring them? Are we really just that blinded by the favorites and the morning line odds?
Well, what's fascinating here is the psychology of the casual bettor. They fall in love with the absolute best case scenario of a horse.
Oh, so true.
They remember that, you know, the horse won brilliantly 3 months ago, but they completely ignore the reality of the ground beneath its hooves today. Horses don't race on spreadsheets.
No, they race on dirt and turf.
Right. And the track surface changes the entire physics of the event. A horse that dominates on firm, tight turf, where their hooves basically bounce right off the ground, might physically stumble, lose their traction, and absolutely hate a soft, wet course.
Right. I get that a mud lover thrives in the rain, but how do you actually spot one in the data before the race starts? Do you have to wait for them to run in the mud first to know?
You can look at their past performances, yes. The form guide literally marks wet track races. But you can also look at their pedigree.
Like their genetics.
Exactly. Certain sires, the fathers of these horses, are genetically predisposed to produce offspring with larger, flatter hooves.
No way.
Yeah, they act almost like snowshoes in the mud. So while the public is throwing money at the heavy favorite, who mathematically hates the rain, the sharp bettor is backing the mud lover at 10-to-1 odds.
That is wild. And it's not just the surface, right? It's the actual physical geometry of the track.
Very much so.
If you take a sprinter, a horse bred for explosive speed, and force it into a mile and a quarter race, it's like making an Olympic 100-meter sprinter run a marathon.
They wouldn't make it.
No. Their fast twitch muscles will physically lock up with lactic acid halfway through. They will completely gas out. Conversely, a stare, a horse bred for deep endurance dropped into a short 5-furlong dash, will get left behind the second the gates open because they just take too long to build momentum.
And every track has a unique geometry. Like Churchill Downs has this massive sweeping turn for home that really benefits horses making a wide late run.
Okay.
But then you have Belmont Park, which is a grueling, sweeping mile and a half oval. It's a pure test of stamina. And Santa Anita is known for being flat, fast, and fair. You have to match the horse's biological running style to the track's architecture.
Which is why the Pitcott sources hammer home the importance of morning observation. You have to show up before the hot dogs are even on the grill.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
Watch the track during the early races. Are the inside lanes looking deep and worn down? Are the early leaders holding on to win, or are they getting exhausted and passed in the final stretch?
Because tracks develop distinct biases. A track might have, like, a tailwind down the backstretch that rewards front runners all morning.
And if you're paying attention, you realize it's going to keep rewarding them all afternoon.
Right. There are days where the absolute inside path is golden for six races straight.
Oh, yeah.
And there are days where absolutely nothing wins from the inside because the tractors churn the dirt too deep. The environment dictates the winner. You just have to observe it.
But environmental data is useless if you don't map out the pace. Pace makes the race. This is my favorite concept.
Thanks, Rachel.
Let's say you look at the form and see that three out of the eight runners all naturally want to be the early leader. They are front runners. What happens?
They fight?
Yes. They aggressively fight each other for that front spot from the second the gates open. They burn through their energy reserves, and that contested pace is a massive calculated gift for the closers.
The horses that just hang back.
Exactly. The ones that happily chill in fifth place, save their energy, and sweep past the exhausted leaders at the end.
You are literally predicting the narrative of the race before they even step onto the track. But here is the catch.
What's the catch?
You can have the perfect horse, the perfect track bias, and the perfect pace scenario, but a horse doesn't steer itself.
Right. It's intensely mechanistic, exactly like Formula One racing. You can have the absolute fastest, most technologically advanced car on the grid, but if your pit crew, the trainer, is making bad calls and your driver, the jockey, takes the wrong racing line, you are not getting anywhere near the podium.
Nope.
We have to analyze the humans.
And the human element leaves a statistical trail just as clear as the horses do. You need to scrutinize trainer statistics.
What are we looking for there?
Well, some trainers run a highly specialized operation. They might have a phenomenal 25% win rate with first-up runners.
Horses returning from a long layoff.
Exactly. They have the training regimen dialed in to make a horse peak on day one. Other trainers might be historically terrible off a layoff, needing two or three races just to get a horse fit.
And if a trainer usually hovers around, say, a 10% win rate for the year, but over the last 3 weeks, they are suddenly winning 30% of their races.
That is what the industry calls a hot barn.
Right. There might be a new feeding program, a new head groom, or just a wave of viral health running through the stable. You have to respect that momentum.
You really do. And you pair the trainer's intent with the jockey's specific skills, because jockeys are not interchangeable parts.
They all have different styles.
Totally. Some are absolute specialists at aggressively getting a horse out of the gate and dictating a front-running pace. Others have this supernatural patient sense of timing and excel at weaving through heavy traffic on closing horses.
So it's about finding a match.
Yeah, if you have a horse that likes to come from behind, but the trainer books a notoriously aggressive front-running jockey, there is a mismatch in the mechanics.
And the Pitcott sources also talk about the hidden signals these humans send to the market. Like if you see a top-tier championship-level jockey booked to ride a completely unknown, lightly raced horse at a random midweek meeting.
Oh, that is a massive confidence signal.
It is a screaming neon sign. Top jockeys have their pick of mounts. If they choose to travel to a smaller track on a Wednesday to ride an unknown horse, the stable has told them something about that horse's raw ability that the general public hasn't seen yet.
But an even louder signal is the jockey change.
Oh, do tell.
If a horse has been ridden by an inexperienced apprentice jockey for its last three races, making mistakes and basically learning the ropes, and suddenly today the trainer swaps in a top five jockey, that equals a clear, aggressive intent to win today.
Oh, and my absolute favorite tell. What about when a top jockey is scheduled to ride the heavy favorite, but jumps off after that favorite to ride a longer price stablemate from the exact same barn?
That is one of the strongest market moves you will ever witness.
Because they know something we don't.
Exactly. The jockey had the choice between the horse everyone expects to win and the horse paying 8-1. They chose the longer odds. Follow the jockeys because they feel the horsepower underneath them in the morning workouts.
Uh-huh. This is so empowering. I am learning so much. And honestly, before we get into the actual mechanics of how to bet your money and protect your bankroll, we have a quick reminder. Please visit www.pitcott.com right now. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads.
Yes, definitely do that.
Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. Okay, let's talk about the money.
This is where the rubber meets the road.
Huh.
We've handicapped the race perfectly, right? We've decoded the form, the pace, the track, and the humans.
Everything is lined up.
But none of that intellectual work matters if a profitable afternoon turns into an empty wallet by the last race. Bankroll management is where 90% of bettors fail.
Because they treat it like an emotional roller coaster instead of a financial portfolio. If you're listening to this and you've ever felt that sinking, desperate feeling of doubling down on the eighth race just to win back what you lost on the fourth race, you know exactly what bad bankroll management feels like.
It's the worst feeling.
People chase their losses, they throw money at massive long shots playing for a miracle, or they get arrogant on a hot streak and bet their entire stack.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, disciplined money management is literally the only wall standing between a fun hobby and a profitable business. Professional bettors use strict mathematical models, and the most famous one is the Kelly Criterion.
Okay, let's break down how the Kelly Criterion actually works, because it sounds like Wall Street jargon, but the mechanism is brilliant.
It really is. The Kelly Criterion isn't just a theory. It's a mathematical formula that tells you exactly what percentage of your total bankroll you should risk on a single bet, based on your perceived edge. For example, let's say the track odds are 5-1, which implies the market thinks the horse has roughly a 16% chance of winning. But your Pidcock handicapping analysis tells you this horse actually has a 30% chance of winning.
So you have a massive mathematical edge.
Exactly. The Kelly formula takes that edge, factors in the odds, and tells you to bet, say, exactly 4.5% of your bankroll. It scales your bet size to the size of your advantage.
That completely removes the emotional, I'm feeling lucky, let's bet $50 mindset.
And it ensures you never bet more than you can mathematically afford to lose, which prevents you from going bankrupt during a cold streak.
So what does this actually mean for the menu of bets? Because a beginner usually just walks up to the window, says $10 to win on horse number 4, and stops there.
Well, win betting is the foundation, but you need to utilize the entire menu depending on the race structure. For a race that is incredibly wide open, where 4 or 5 horses could realistically win, you want to look at each way betting.
Where you cover multiple positions.
Yeah, you are betting the horse to win, but also covering yourself if they finish 2nd or 3rd.
And then there is the 80-20 rule. So what does this all mean for someone placing their first few bets? Is the 80-20 rule basically the ultimate shock absorber for your bankroll?
It is a phenomenal defensive strategy. You take your total stake for a race, let's say $10, and you put 20% or $2 on the horse to win. You put the remaining 80% or $8 on that exact same horse to place, meaning to finish in the top tier.
Oh, I love that.
Right, because what this does is provide frequent, smaller returns from the place bets. It keeps your bankroll ticking over, it absorbs the impact of close losses, while still giving you a profit spike if the horse actually crosses the finish line first.
That makes total sense, but what about the exotics? Because I see people playing exactus and trifectus constantly.
Exotic bets require you to pick multiple horses. In an exacta, you have to pick the first 2 horses to finish, in exact order. A trifecta requires the top 3.
That sounds incredibly hard.
It is. The payouts are massively inflated, but the difficulty is exponential. They will drain your bankroll incredibly fast if you use them on every race. The same goes for daily doubles or pick 6 bets, where you have to predict the winner of multiple consecutive races.
So tempting, though.
The payouts can be life-changing, yeah, but you should only play them when you have a profound, highly researched conviction.
Because modern handicapping has evolved into a data war. You aren't just betting against the guys leaning on the rail smoking cigars anymore.
No, you are betting against syndicates and data scientists.
You are. The digital tools available today are staggering. We have immense databases for speed figures, instant trainer strike rate calculators, and real-time form apps. But the most revolutionary tool is sectional timing.
Oh, absolutely. Sectional timing exposes the fake winners.
Yes. Let's explain this mechanism. A traditional result just tells you where a horse finished at the end of the race. Sectional timing breaks the race down into chunks, telling you exactly how fast the horse moved in each quarter of the race. Why is that so crucial to finding an edge?
Because it reveals the true energy expenditure. Imagine a horse that got to the front of the pack early, and the jockey essentially let it jog at a slow walking pace for the first half of the race.
They got an easy lead.
Exactly. Then they sprinted for the final quarter mile and won. On paper, it looks like a brilliant victory. The public will heavily bet that horse today.
Right.
But the sectional times expose the fraud. They show the horse had an incredibly easy, uncontested trip. Today, against faster horses who won't let it jog early, that same horse will collapse from exhaustion. Sectional timing finds the horses that are overvalued by the public.
And we are even seeing artificial intelligence and machine learning entering the space, scraping thousands of races to find hidden patterns. But the Pidcock sources are very clear on this. Use AI to inform your human judgment, never to replace it.
Yeah, because data is blind to the physical world.
Exactly. You might have a horse with the perfect algorithmic profile. The speed figures are elite. The pace maps out perfectly. But then you go to the paddock for a live physical inspection before the race.
And what do you see?
The horse is sweating profusely through its coat. Its eyes are wide with anxiety. It's kicking the stall. And it's expending massive amounts of nervous energy.
A live paddock inspection can absolutely overrule the spreadsheet. If the numbers say one thing, but the animal's physical demeanor tells you is having a panic attack, you have to trust your eyes.
This is where immersing yourself in the community becomes an edge. Talk to the trackside regulars who have been watching these animals for decades.
They know things the apps don't.
Exactly. They can tell you if a horse is wearing new equipment or if a stable has changed its prep routine. Plus, there is a massive accountability factor. If you have to vocally defend your betting rationale to a friend, it instantly stops you from making lazy, impulsive bets based on a horse's name.
And part of that education is learning how to watch the race itself. The Pidcot sources say most casual punters watch the race with their stomach.
Haha, I love that phrasing. Watching with your stomach just means gripping your ticket and screaming at your horse the whole time, completely blind to everything else happening on the dirt.
But watching with your brain means taking in the entire field. It means analyzing the jockey, pushing hard on their horse at the halfway mark, and realizing they have absolutely nothing left in the tank for the finish.
Right.
And crucially, when the race is over, your work isn't done. Don't just rip up your losing ticket and walk away. Watch the replays. You watch it live for the thrill, but you watch the replay for the education.
You're looking for the troubled trip, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You are looking for the horse that got boxed in by other runners, or the horse that stumbled at the starting gate, or the one that had to take a massive wide path around the final turn.
Right, because they lost distance.
Yeah. That horse might have finished seventh today, but it wasn't because of a lack of talent. It was because of bad traffic. It carries a completely different, much more dangerous profile for its next race than a horse that simply wasn't fast enough.
And while you're watching the horses, you have to keep one eye on the betting board to watch the market moves. The odds are a living, breathing entity.
They really are.
If you see a horse that opened at 5-1 odds slowly drift up to 10-1 in the final 5 minutes before the race, the market is speaking to you.
It is a massive red flag. Drifting odds mean the sharp money is staying far away. Maybe the track condition changed or the stable knows the horse isn't fully fit.
What about when the odds drop suddenly?
Well, conversely, if you see a horse's odds drastically shorten in the last 60 seconds, say from 8-1 down to 3-1, that is often professional betting syndicates hiding their intent until the last possible second so the public can't follow their money.
So you are ultimately looking for convergence. You want the moment when the form data, the pace scenario, the track bias, the jockey intent, and the late market moves all point like arrows to the exact same horse.
When you find that convergence, you bet with absolute conviction. But to wait for that perfect alignment requires the hardest discipline of all, patience.
Oh, yeah.
This raises an incredibly important question for the listener. Do you have the discipline to go to the track and not place a bet at all?
That is the strategy nobody sells. Everyone wants the dopamine hit of having action in every single race.
Well, of course they do.
But value betting is strictly about finding the gap between the real, calculated probability of a horse winning and the market price being offered. If there is no value, you don't bet. The best bettors in the world might only bet 3 races out of a 10 race card.
Watching a race without betting is an education in itself. And you have to understand variance.
The math does not care about your feelings.
Or your rent money. You will endure losing streaks. 7, 8, or 9 consecutive losses is just a statistical reality of betting into chaotic fields.
So it's about survival.
Exactly. The goal of professional handicapping isn't to never lose. The goal is managing your bankroll and surviving the bad runs so you are still heavily capitalized when the perfect convergence finally hits.
It's the difference between being a sniper and a machine gunner. You don't just spray bets everywhere on every race, hoping one randomly hits the target. You wait in the weeds.
You wait for the shot.
Yes. You do your exhaustive homework, you read the form, you map the pace, you watch the physical track, and you wait for your calculated edge.
Every winner tells you something about the track bias, but every loser tells you more about the mechanics of the race.
Wow, yeah.
If you can use the Pidcot sources to strip the emotion and the illusion of luck out of something as intensely chaotic as a thoroughbred horse race by using pure data, discipline, and observation, what other chaotic areas of your life could you master if you just applied that exact same handicapping mindset to them.
Wow. Taking the racetrack from a blind lottery to executing a perfectly planned data heist, I absolutely love that perspective. Thank you for listening to the Pit Cop podcast. I will leave a link in the description below. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads.
Please do.
Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. Thank you for being there with us, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.